Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, episode 13.
Ooh, ominous. We made it to 13, baby.
Your gateway to the trends and tropes of the horror genre. 13. This, we're covering in number 13 a pretty innocuous topic, and we should be covering something way more evil. We should have done like Satanism for 13.
The most evil horror movies of all time.
Or a cult or something.
We could have done our Bridge Too Far one.
But tonight we're covering our favorite in honor of the upcoming. But maybe by the time you hear this, it'll be past. But you know, it's always around the corner next year. Yep. The Oscars. So we're tonight we're covering our favorite actors and actresses. So what do you got? What do you think about when you think about actors and actresses? Did you go? Because we talked about in one of our last podcasts, we talked about directors and kind of whether or not they stuck with the genre. And there's mm-hmm. definitely some actors and mm-hmm. actresses who stuck with the genre. Yeah. They stuck with it and rode that horse till it was dead.
And I think that's more the case for the actors and the actresses. I think.
Do you?
Yeah, I thought when I, if you go to scariestthings.com, we did a rundown of the Oscar snubs and all-time Oscar nominees.
Yep.
The remarkable thing is that we have had a grand total of 3 best actors nominated for horror films. We have Daniel Kaluuya this year.
Yep.
And then we had...
Better get it.
We had Frederick March back in 1936 for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
And then we had Sir Anthony Hopkins
for Silence of the Lambs.
So both March and Hopkins won, which bodes well for Daniel Kaluuya, who's totally going to win the Oscar, right?
Come on,
baby. Yeah.
Come on, Oscars.
But
do us a solid.
That's three.
Do us a solid.
In about 100 years worth of Oscars, we've had 3 horror guys team. So, and it's not like we've had a shortage of opportunities.
No.
But what you do find with the actors is that there are a lot of actors who've staked their entire career in the genre.
Right.
Opposite side is that with the actresses,
dip in and out.
Right. Well, the actress is almost like they launch their careers with horror and then they leave.
Right.
So
the proverbial scream queen.
Yeah, but you look at the Oscar winning actresses or Oscar nominated actresses, you get Kathy Bates, Sissy Spacek, Jodie Foster, Natalie Portman. This year, Sally Hawkins, mm-hmm. Linda Blair, Janet Leigh, Ellen
Burstyn.
But
think about somebody like Linda Blair, who she made every attempt she could to leave the genre, but it kept on pulling her back.
Yeah, and she really
got stuck with one role. She got stuck with one role, which was sad, because in that one role, whoo boy.
Yeah. She got Christopher Reeved.
Yes, she did get Christopher Reeved. And we covered this a couple weeks ago. We didn't cover her as a child per se.
Right.
Because I think, you know, much like we've talked about, there are some films that transcend the genre, and The Exorcist is absolutely one of them. Yeah.
So you can have, you know, Mia Farrow, another didn't get the nomination, should have.
Sure.
But, you know, her career took off after Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah.
Audrey Hepburn.
Biggest actor or actress Oscar snub, go.
Shelley Duvall.
In The Shining.
In The Shining.
No question.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. She sold her soul. She's pretty much 128 takes for Stanley Kubrick so that she could peg it. It's like, you believe it, it's like, oh my God, she sold Wendy's fear, because she was herself emotionally scarred at that moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nev Campbell, Scream.
No. But I guess what I was getting at here is that these were, it's a launching pad for a lot of great art, great actresses. I think it was first time we heard of Kathy Bates was Misery, and you don't see many women sticking into in the horror genre, so I suspect we're going to run into each other at some point with the actresses.
Oh, for sure.
Because I think our attitude behind this is...
Did you do all actors, all actresses? Did you mix it up?
Yeah, I did. I did top four actors, top four actresses.
Okay. So I did four. I whittled it down to four.
Okay. Well, this
whittled it down to four. Whittled it down to four. We
so,
have.
So we're going to be.
Eric and I have a slight different list. Slight assignment miscommunication.
Whoops.
But that's good.
Okay. You're going to get more bang for the buck today, or at least for me.
Tight. It's going to be tight. Or so, my list is going to be tight. Eric's list
Mine's going to be kind of rambling.
It's going to drone on. So, and on. You're going to be like, shut up with these actors and actresses. No, you will not be saying
it,
that.
Because you love the genre, don't you? Come on.
All right. So you want to, well, why don't you go first? Like, give us like three.
Okay. So I am going to go with my oldest on the list. I'm going with the Gentle Giant.
Yeah. I'm going
Boris Karloff.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah.
And he defined the genre. I think last episode we talked about key moments in film history before and after. We talked about Night of the Living Dead. I think there's before and after Frankenstein.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that the also establishing the universal monster trope of the relatable, the monster who you can identify with.
Yep.
Karloff was an extremely sympathetic monster.
Mm-hmm.
He was scary at the time. I mean, the genre, they pitched it as serious horror.
Mm-hmm.
All those universal monsters were pitched as adult scary stuff. And at the time, it freaked audiences out. And he followed up. He had this run: Frankenstein 1931, The Mummy 1932, The Ghoul 1933, The Black Cat 1934, The Raven 1935. Bride of Frankenstein 35, Son of Frankenstein 39, and then things start beginning to fall apart for him. He did The Body Snatcher in 45, and then he's pretty much doing stupid stuff like Abbott and Costello meet Boris Karloff,
right.
And then there's The Ghost in the Invisible Bikini.
Wait, whoa, that's a good film.
So, I think that he established the foundation of the genre, and you know, I think all the way up to when 1966 when he did How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and he was the Grinch.
That's right. You know what's interesting about Boris Karloff? Well, not necessarily Boris Karloff, but that genre of film is that, you know, the whole concept of the relatable monster, now that you mention it, is really kind of void from current horror films. I mean, even if you look back at the 2014-2015 Godzilla, the Godzilla isn't terribly relatable. He's not terribly sympathetic. They try to give him some sympathetic qualities, but it's not like in the monster movies of the 50s and 60s when the monster dies, you actually got your heartstrings strum and you feel bad for the monster. You feel bad as he's being, like, you know, by being shot by missiles repeatedly or falling back into the ocean, and you go, God, this is really terrible.
Frankenstein's monster did nothing. Well, he killed a little girl. So he did something wrong, but he wasn't evil.
No.
And yet the peasants with the torches and the pitchforks come after him and Victor Frankenstein.
Right.
And I think that was
or even like The Mummy, where it's like he's doing bad, but he has no choice. He is cursed.
Right.
This is the curse.
And that wouldn't have worked without Boris Karloff behind the mask.
Right. So Hollywood, bring back the relatable monster. Okay, then go again.
I'm going to go again, and I'm going to do
down.
I'm going to do a favorite actress, and I'm going to go with old school actress.
Yes.
I'm going with a matinee idol from the 1950s schlocky movies.
Ooh.
Beverly Garland.
Beverly Garland.
So she was sort of a discount version of Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
Right. Absolutely stunning, curvy, Platinum Blonde.
Poor man's Marilyn Monroe.
And
is she still with us?
Beverly? No, she passed away a while ago. But
come on.
But she starred in her first sort of horror-ish thing was Killer Leopard.
I've never seen Killer Leopard.
You might not want to. But It Conquered the World was a throwback from our last episode. We talked a little bit about that. Not of This Earth, which has an absolutely fantastic poster and one of the most ridiculous puppet monsters. It's like they promise you aliens from above, and it looks like someone dropped a glove on someone's head, and it's like it's the junior varsity version of Aliens Face Hugger. And it just sort of drops in from the ceiling, right? And it's like, oh no! But you can see the wires.
Right.
It's totally ridiculous. Roger Corman.
Yes.
In that era. She did The Alligator People.
Ooh.
And which is another really... It's a guy walking around in an alligator suit with the head... sort of prop, you know how an alligator is long and its head sort of projects long from its body? Alligator People, it just looks like, it's clearly a guy with like a motorcycle helmet with an
alligator bill.
It's like so stupid looking.
Now, did Beverly stick with the genre? No.
So this is one of the things for Beverly. She owned the 1950s Scream Queenie kind of thing. Because
right.
The thing is, she, like Faye Ray before her,
yeah,
she could scream and then she could bug her eyes out and just act terrified.
Right.
And eventually she grew past that. She got an Emmy Award for a TV drama in the 1955, and eventually she had a steady but unspectacular career later on.
Huh.
But she was emblematic of the damsel in distress in the 1950s. Horror movies, and her face is like unmistakable from the movie posters. She's iconic of that era, in a sort of a gap in horror movies.
Right.
And I was trying to look for someone who did multiple horror movies, and frankly, I had a hard time finding folks. But she did a lot of these kind of schlocky things in the 50s. So
good,
that's
good on you, Bev.
Yeah.
Rest in
peace.
Beverly
Garland, check her out.
Yeah, check out Bev Garland. All right, throw another one at us.
Okay, going newer school.
Keep it going.
Okay, if I'm telling you, I'm picking the creepy little dude.
Yes.
Who's the creepy little dude?
Saw. No, Puppet Master.
No.
No, Chucky. No.
It's an actor.
Leprechaun. Leprechaun.
No, okay. not that little. I'm selecting Jeffrey Combs.
Oh.
The Reanimator.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dr. Herbert West from The Reanimator.
Yes.
So there's a lot
He's great.
For those of you youngins out there.
Yes.
Who may
jump,
not be familiar
your
with their 1980s. VHS tapes.
Yes, get back into your time machine and go back to the 1980s.
Yeah, and These are straight to video releases that were gory, fun, Lovecraftian movies.
But not bad films.
They're good.
Straight to video, they're solid movies.
His streak from about 85 to 90, he did The Reanimator in 85.
Mm-hmm.
Did From Beyond in 86. He did Castle Freak in 85.
Which is not good. We saw that.
Yeah, that's,
dude, that might
that,
make the dead undead list at some point, because that is just a bag of gross.
But we're saying this, we're establishing that he's got one foot firmly in the genre.
Yes.
Right? He did Necronomicon, Book of the Dead in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
He was in The Frighteners, Peter Jackson movie in 1996.
Right.
He did Bride of the Reanimator.
Right.
Not so good.
No.
He did I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. Not so good.
Yeah.
Did The House on Haunted Hill, 1999. Not so good. And then he did this one fun, and it's one of my little guilty pleasures.
I Know What You Did Last Summer was not a bad film. The first one is not terrible.
And then he did one in 2012 called Would You Rather, where he played
everybody
sitting around sort of a truth or dare kind of a thing where people will
get a little haywire.
Yeah, and people do horrible things to
just
each other.
Just a little.
So Jeffrey Combs, a distinct creepy little dude with the soft voice. He's done a lot of television. He was in Deep Space Nine,
right?
And he's often cast as a scientist who's sort of a nefarious whisperer. type of guy. So anyway, so if you're not familiar with Jeffrey Combs, start with The Reanimator and Herbert West. It is one of the best Lovecraftian films you'll see. Okay, so that's me pushing some of my favorites out
there. All right, so far we have Jeffrey Combs, we have Beverly Garland, we have Boris Karloff,
yeah.
And now we're adding to the list Janet Leigh.
Oh, okay. Well, I figured we'd bump into each other.
Yeah, okay, so Janet Leigh, boy. The fact that she birthed Jamie Lee Curtis.
Which is a boy, oh boy moment.
Which we might get to at a later part of the podcast.
As
one of the greatest actresses in horror picture history. Janet Leigh, unfortunately, is no longer with us. She died in 2004. She had a year-long battle with vasculitis. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
a blood inflammation of blood vessels.
Oh,
sounds like a terrible way to go.
But not as bad as the way to go as she got in Psycho.
That's right. Yeah. So some of her roles included Psycho, which Eric mentioned. Amazing film.
She Oscar nominated.
Marion Crane. She was Kathy Williams in The Fog
with Jamie Lee Curtis, her daughter.
She was in Night of the Lepus, involving. If you haven't seen this,
watch
the trailer because the trailer is great. This is a 1972 film involving giant mutated rabbits in the Southwest. And the soundtrack's great. It's got that great 70s in search of.
But it's shooting real rabbits, trying to make them look big by putting them in miniature sets.
What they did was they had actors and actresses dressed in rabbit costumes for the attack scene.
Night of the Lepus.
We're going to do, a couple weeks from now, we're going to be covering Night of the Lepus. That's going to be the whole episode. Night of the Lepus night.
We're going to have to do a binge watch with Night of the Lepus.
I've
read about Night of the Lepus. I haven't watched it.
Oh, you got to watch it. It's even got DeForest Kelly.
Bones.
Yes, Bones is in it. She was also, of course, in Halloween H2O 20 years later with
Jamie Lee Curtis.
And, of course, probably one of her more famous roles was Touch of Evil.
I was going to say, Touch of Evil.
Yeah, which has become kind of
Orson Welles.
It's Orson Welles. It's one of his greatest films. It's got a tracking shot at the beginning of the film that goes on for I think at the time it was like one of the longest tracking shots ever in film history. It goes on for like 5 minutes. It's not a horror film per se.
It's a thriller.
It's a thriller. I mean, it's the ultimate in, like, everyone will tell you when you take film history 101 as a film noir film, this is the ultimate.
I put Touch of Evil with the original Cape Fear.
Yeah.
And Night of the Hunter.
Yeah.
Things like that. Those very, very noir thrillers from that era.
Yeah.
It's a landmark film.
Yeah. It's a murder. It's not horror. It's not a horror murder. It's murder.
Yeah.
It's nothing paranormal.
It's the unscary version of the murder.
It's an unscary unscary version of the murder, if you can have one. All right. So that's my number four. Throw a couple more our way.
Okay. So I'm going to throw the thespian at you.
Uh-oh.
This is the...
You throw the thespian. I'm going to throw the non-thespian after you throw the thespian.
I have a non-thespian coming up, too.
All right, good.
We might collide.
Good.
Sir Christopher Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Dracula.
Dracula. Not to be confused with Blackula.
No.
I don't remember the guy who played Blackula, but... No. That's a different podcast.
Sort of in the same. he was doing Dracula when Blackula was coming out in the early 70s.
Yes.
He got his start in 1947,
mm-hmm.
mostly as a background actor, but he got hooked up with Hammer Films.
Yep.
And in 1957, he did The Curse of Frankenstein.
Yep.
And he's such an imposing man.
Said
that basso profundo voice,
mm-hmm.
He used to fantastic effect with the horror of Dracula, which for your money, might be the scariest Dracula that's ever been done. I mean, he's a powerful.
I'd go with that.
Powerful Dracula. It was a huge hit, and Hammer.
What year was that?
That was in 1958.
1958, right.
So he went on to do, I think, five more Dracula movies for Hammer, and each one, Christopher Lee was kind of he was a proud, arrogant man, and that he wasn't being paid his full wages, and so he spent Dracula, Prince of Darkness, which was in 1966, he chose not to say anything, and all he did was go, and he did that as a protest for not actually getting his what he felt like he deserved for the wages.
But the 1960s is when Dracula started to get sexy.
Yeah, right. Well,
sexy Dracula.
And but with a voice like that, it's like it's like, how can you not resist Dracula? He also did
Dracula.
I guess similar to Karloff and Lugosi, he was also the Mummy. He was also Frankenstein's Monsters and Curse of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
So he's worn all three of some of the iconic character makeups. He also, I think, his high watermark acting-wise relative to the horror genre was probably The Wicker Man in 1973.
Oh, yeah.
Where he played Lord Summerisle, and he loved that screenplay so much that he said, "You don't have to pay me for this one. I'm doing this for free."
Wow.
And considering he was kind of a dick to Hammer during the 1960s because they asked him to do more Dracula movies where they didn't give him lines that he thought were appropriate for a man of his stature.
Right.
He went out and he put his money where his mouth was.
Right.
And did The Wicker Man, which is now known more for Nicolas Cage's preposterous performance.
Yes.
More recently, go watch the old Wicker Man. Yeah. It's a great movie.
Yeah, we haven't talked Wicker Man yet.
So Christopher Lee,
we'll get there. Okay, so on the flip side of the Christopher Lee coin, and this is where I fudged a little on actors. This is an actor, stunt performer, in film quotes. Director, prosthetic makeup artist known as Tom Savini. Tom Savini was in. He was in Creepshow 2 as the creep.
Right.
And he did all the makeup for it. He was, of course, Blades in Dawn of the Dead. Right. He was Sex Machine in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes.
He was Arthur in the George Romero great Martin.
Yep.
And he was Disco Boy in Maniac, the William Lustig grindhouse sleazoid film. Here's the thing with Tom Savini. Like, Tom Savini is... unlike Christopher Lee, where there was things that were too good for him, there's nothing too good. There's nothing too good for Tom Savini, and he just, like, I've never met him, but he gives off an incredibly earnest and authentic quality. Like, I'm here on the film set. I'm willing to pitch in and do whatever.
He shares his craft too.
He shares his craft. In fact, on that note, he is working right now with Tina Romero, George Romero's daughter, and he's doing the special effects for her web series, which I think we talked
about. Queens of the Dead.
Yeah, Queens of the Dead, which we talked about. And he's having his students at the Pennsylvania Douglas Education Center do all of the special effects.
Yeah, he has a school.
Yeah.
If you ever watch there's a TV show on Sci-Fi Channel called Face Off, which has become a big hit because it talks about prosthetic applications. It's all about the Hollywood makeup art, and they all revere. There's the Tom Savini School of Makeup, and a lot of them come from that school.
Right.
And there's
we talked about this a little bit earlier. Innovator, icon. Like, before Dawn of the Dead, there really wasn't people quite doing that sort of stuff.
Remarkably, I don't know that he's gotten an Oscar for best makeup yet. A lot of his prodigies have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Greg Nicotero has.
Right, right, right.
Rob Bottin has.
Mm-hmm.
So... ever read Fangoria magazine, which just so happens to be back in publication after about a year and a half absence.
Thanks, scariestthings.com.
Tom Savini was the kind of a guy who made that magazine, because it was all about gore and the effects and convincing, you know, before the age of computers where you needed fake Karo syrup blood and rubber prosthetics to yep. sell your product.
And I'm here to tell you, it still looks way better than CGI.
And that's why his school still does so well.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom Savini, I mean, not the best actor, obviously. I'm being somewhat facetious with this nod, but he did act in a lot of films, but he, more importantly, it's what he gave to the genre. And this guy exclusively gives to this genre.
Yeah. So, I'll go with my
We've lost count.
My non-thespian.
We are like super off the rails on tonight's episode. We have like totally lost count. There's not a fearsome foursome. It's a troublesome 12.
It's a dog pile at this point.
It's a dog pile. We are so far off the rails.
So we're glad you're still with us. You're still listening, aren't you?
Thank you. Thank you.
So if I'm telling you, I'm putting up the idiot savant.
Uh huh.
For horror movies, I got Bruce Campbell.
We got a crossover.
Okay,
for sure.
So this is, you know, he loves the genre so much. He has been one of the great ambassadors for the genre. Mm-hmm. He's been at it since he was a handsome, strapping young lad, and now that he's kind of a doofusy, fun older actor who's going to be in Ash vs. Evil Dead opening this week.
Yep.
On Stars, and if you haven't seen it up to now and you're listening to this podcast, I don't know what you're thinking. Go back to Amazon.com or Hulu or wherever you need to go and
watch Maniac Cop.
Yeah. or Bubba Hotep. You know, I think
now he wasn't the bad guy in Maniac Cop, though.
No.
Although
the advertising would suggest it was.
They think he's the bad guy in Maniac Cop, or at least his wife in Maniac Cop thinks he is the Maniac Cop, but he is not the Maniac Cop.
But most people know Bruce Campbell from The Evil Dead.
Yes.
And I think he physically put himself through so much torture from Sam Raimi.
Oh my gosh.
The sequence where he's banging plates over his head and just throwing himself around. They didn't have money for real special effects, so he had to do a full Buster Keaton. He was his own stuntman.
Yes.
So much fun.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell. So Eric and I went to Comic-Con several years ago, and we were picking up our passes at the Comic-Con...
San Diego, yeah.
San Diego Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con, the big one. The granddaddy, and we were picking up our passes that day, and we were picking them up from the booth, and the woman handed me, because I share the same last name as Bruce Campbell, she handed me Bruce Campbell's ID, and I didn't take it, although I was awful close.
Because you're a Campbell.
I was Campbell, and I was like, boy, should I just take Bruce Campbell's San Diego Comic-Con pass, or... I didn't. I didn't.
Well,
I was ethical. I was moral. I didn't do it. I am still kicking myself to this day for not having taken it. Well, but I did get to go meet that when we went down on that trip. I did get to meet the ladies of the Evil Dead,
nice.
And I got to get Evil Dead box set signed by all the women in Evil Dead. That was my karmic comeback.
I came close to having a Bruce Campbell moment up in Wizworld, in our Portland Comic Con. One of my good friends, Sam Tudyk, her brother is Alan Tudyk, mm-hmm. who is he was in Star Wars,
right.
Rogue One.
Right.
He's Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Right.
He's I'm sure you know who he is a genre actor par excellence. And I got a message from Sam, and because I said, "Hey Sam, are you on the floor?" And she texted me, "Oh, it's too bad you missed us. I'm heading out with Alan and Bruce Campbell and Lou Ferrigno, and we're going to dinner. Too bad. It's like, if you were here half an hour earlier, I probably would have wet myself.
Dinner with Hulk and Ash.
And if you've not gotten the opportunity to listen to Bruce Campbell do an interview, he's one of the best interviews. He's one of the most generous guys, and he has a lot of fun. You know how a lot of actors, They have to do their press junkets, and they just kind of go through the motions? Bruce Campbell engages. He really loves what he does.
And his books are funny, too.
Oh, yes. If Chins Could Kill.
Yes.
Great book.
Another guy who just continually gives and gives and gives, and it shows, and it's total authenticity.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to go to my. Well, this is my. I'm down to my last one since we've had so many crossovers. Yep. Even though we've had so many, and we've already talked about this person who was birthed by Janet Leigh.
So we're another collision. Go ahead.
Another massive collision. This is probably the most collisions we've ever had. Of course, we were talking about the Jamie Lee Curtis.
Woo!
She was just the best of the best. She was Laurie Strode in Halloween and all of the sequels. She was Elizabeth Solly in The Fog. She was Kim Hammond in Prom Night. Mm-hmm. She was Alana Maxwell in The Terror Train, which isn't a great
Terror Train, not so good.
Not so good. We watched that a couple years ago. Yeah. I wanted to like it. She was in a film, you know, which I haven't seen, a 1999 flick called Virus.
Not good.
It sounds interesting.
Sci-fi horror.
Interesting premise, although there's not Alec Baldwin, but I think it's Billy Baldwin.
Yeah, the wrong Baldwin.
Wrong Baldwin. So maybe not super, super solid cred there. But yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis, boy, oh boy. You know, she really, frankly, transcends the genre. In terms of the horror scream queen, because she's grown up with it, and she's done so many different takes on it, and been involved in so many different ways.
Fully embraced it.
Where
most of the actresses who break out and have a huge moment in these kinds of things go on to bigger, better things. Mia Farrow being a great example.
Right. She went on. I mean, she did
Fish Called Wanda.
She did Fish Called Wanda.
Was the one with the Schwarzenegger one where she Total Lies, was it? Or True Lies?
True Lies. Yeah, she was in the Eddie Murphy joint in the early 80s. Yeah, she did a lot of a lot of other stuff. Freaky Friday, a lot of other iconic stuff. But, I mean, she was not somebody that stuck with the genre, but she came back to the genre. Yeah. So, for that, we give her...
Yep, she's my number one.
An attaboy. Yeah. Oh yeah. I
have a huge pile of stuff in this dog pile.
Yes.
Keep on going.
Keep us going.
I've got
keep us going. Rattle
Sarah
off.
Michelle Gellar.
Oh, interesting pick.
Because this is and again this was my it was
wait
hard
you
for
were
me.
Just you were just bagging on I Know What You Did Last Summer.
No, I said that I still
oh,
know
still
what
you did. Yes. Yeah,
see now
again I
Know What You Did Last Summer was good.
It was.
And she was in that.
Yeah.
She was also in Scream 2.
Yeah. Solid.
The first few Scream movies, super solid. Very.
Another, much like Wicker Man, we haven't really got to the Scream movies yet.
Right.
Not really.
I think that they came at a time in a sort of a void within the horror genre. The mid 90s was not a great time for horror movies. And Scream was the self-referential postmodern take because they sort of recognized that the slasher genre had gotten cliched, and so that they riffed on that, and I think that was
clean cut tween cousin to William Lustig and Grindhouse maniac fare of the 70s and 80s,
right? And it spawned some other ones that you know. What's Final Destination, things like where you have scads of pretty teenagers getting offed in, you know, killing by numbers kind of a thing. And it's a you know, franchise horror. I'm not a fan of that type of film.
Right.
But Scream, credit where credit's due, does what we're doing.
Yes.
They talk about the tropes and what...
Entrance
in the horror genre.
We'll get there. We'll get to Scream. All right. What else you got?
I think that she was also in The Grudge.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which was a very good remake of
Solid. Sam Raimi.
So
go back to podcast number 12. Listen to the best directors in the horror genre.
Exactly. And so that the other person I have listed is Faye Ray.
Oh. Going all the way back.
The original Scream Queen. Right.
Going all the way back.
You know, and she was in a couple. Really, this was kind of a thing where I asked Mike before we did this podcast. It's like, are we going for career achievement or are we going for singular performance? I think for the best actresses, kind of a thing, or the favorite actresses, it's much easier to go with the individual moments. And certainly Faye Ray, King Kong.
Yeah.
Was the Scream Queen standard for? I mean, the fact that she had got some pipes.
She was probably the scream queeniest until Laurie Strode on the scene.
Although I would say Beverly Garland would give her a run for the money. But she was also in Mystery of the Wax Museum, a movie called Dr. X, and a movie called The Vampire Bat. Now, they're horror movies. I haven't seen any of them.
Yeah.
But I have seen her in. In King Kong, and it is one of my all-time favorite movies. And she needed to sell that she was afraid of a monster. It was the first time that someone actually had to really work with a green screen kind of a situation where she was reacting to a little miniature puppet, and she pulled it off. And it was the Beauty and the Beast thing really worked.
Yeah. All right.
So. That was the end of our kind of convoluted trip around our favorite actors.
We got through a lot. Let's go through them again here.
Okay.
I'm going to go through mine really fast. You go through yours. Jamie Lee Curtis, Bruce Campbell, which we talked about, Tom Savini, Janet Leigh. Go.
Beverly Garland, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Faye Ray. Did you have Bruce Campbell?
Bruce Campbell.
Yeah. Jeffrey Combs, Boris Karloff, and Christopher Lee.
That's a good list.
It is a good list. And we might come back to it again with different folks. This might be the gift that keeps on giving where we can talk about some of our favorite folks.
Absolutely. I think we could even tighten this list up and throw some different wrinkles on it. So let's get to that point in the podcast that you know and love, which we call our dead and undead list. These are the films that we tell you you need to go see, and you need to stay the hell away from.
Yeah.
So what do you got for your dead? We'll start with dead this week. This is the film to stay away from, to stay dead.
Okay, so when I was a kid, Alien made a huge impression on me, right? There was a movie that came out fairly soon afterwards called Saturn 3.
Oh, no. You going to diss Farrah Fawcett?
Yes.
On.
Oh, my God. That was a terrible movie.
You're going to diss Farrah Fawcett.
This robot without a head. Was it... help me out here. The actor, was it Maximilian Schell or was it... Kirk Douglas?
Kirk Douglas. Maximilian Schell
Black
was
Hole.
It was in The Black Hole.
Two similar... Yes, again, yes. The same
groovy, though.
The Black Hole is an acid trip, Star Wars ripoff. Kind of fun. Saturn III, not fun.
No.
I mean, it was like... And it doesn't help when the monster is this lumbering, clunking thing that just... It doesn't move very... It's like, there's nothing particularly threatening. It's hard to get to grab... They shoot it completely in the dark because they're trying to keep it a mystery. But at the same time, it's like, I'm not seeing the outline of this thing. And it's just... It was bad animatronics.
I'm pretty sure Farrah Fawcett was stoned the whole movie.
Yeah.
Extra stoned. Because that acting like performance...
Sleepwalking.
Yes, sleepwalking. High as a kite.
So what's your dead movie?
So I'm going to cheat again. I cheated a couple weeks ago with a dead undead combo, which was Last House on the Left, the film you should see and should not see.
Now you got another one.
I'm going to cheat again. It was so successful. The last cheat was so successful.
Because you guys all clamored for it and wanted more.
You wanted more cheating. You wanted Mike to cheat and not do his homework. And so I'm doing it again.
Okay.
And I picked the 19... 77 flick, which we just reviewed on the scariestthings.com website, The Crater Lake Monster. This is a film you should see and should not see, because for one, it doesn't really involve a monster. It involves a plesiosaur, which is not a monster. And it's not filmed in Crater Lake. It's filmed in Huntington Lake. And
where's Huntington Lake?
I got out my Googler, and I figured out the distance between Huntington Lake in California, which is somewhere near Fresno, and Crater Lake.
Nothing. So there's no mountain there, is there?
It is 557 miles from Crater Lake.
Oh, man. Think about it this way. It's a national park. There's no way you're going to film a C-grade movie at Crater Lake.
It's not even C. It is D-grade. But, again, you know, much like we kind of talked about with, like, Tom Savini and talked about some of the other actors, I mean, people that just sort of stick with the genre and give their all and do their best, the earnestness of this film really shows. I mean, these were people who... Like, I looked up many of the actors involved in Crater Lake Monster, and this was it. It was a one-and-done situation. They never went on to other things, and they never had stuff before. So they did the movie, and they were pretty much done.
Here's your check. Thank you very much.
This is your shit. That's it. Go away. But the thing that was great about the film was that it had one of the more innovative for any movie, frankly, whether be it a monster movie, a slasher movie, a sci-fi movie, a paranormal movie. The film culminated with the protagonist, the sheriff, whose name escapes me now, and the giant plesiosaur, the American Nessie version of its Loch Ness brethren. And the sheriff from the local community jumps into a snowplow and gets into it with the Loch Ness Monster, which is it's like a D-grade Ray Harryhausen Loch Ness Monster, and snowplow and monster, and the blade comes down, and oh boy. Yeah. So Crater Lake Monster, I'm sure you've all seen it kicking around, at least on lots and lots of different worst of lists. This is not a gateway horror film per se, although it is a film you could show to the kids.
It's a Mystery Science
Mystery Science Theater 3000 kind of thing. It's a film you shouldn't see, but it's also a film you should see because it's kind of fun. But if you're looking to see beautiful footage of Crater Lake, do not look to this film because it ain't in there.
That's wrong lake.
Wrong lake.
So I actually, I've got a real Harryhausen piece,
mm-hmm,
with really fantastic animation.
Oh,
Break it down. This is the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, yeah. This is
that's a good one.
It's
Saturn III and the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. These are good picks.
It's not really a true dinosaur. They call it a Rhedosaur. R-H-E-D-O. I don't know.
That's not a thing.
It's a fake dinosaur.
That is not a thing.
As a kid, it's like before there was Jurassic Park, mm-hmm, and you wanted to see some dinosaurs, you had to go to Ray Harryhausen and some things like the Valley of Guanji, you know, with
right,
cowboys and dinosaurs. But
right,
but
Sinbad.
I think that Beast from 20,000 Fathoms actually had, it was the beast comes out of they of course, what do? They nuke the polar ice caps just because you know they're testing things out. And this, it releases the monster and it starts heading for land, and you know, the military tries to stop it, and no, it manages to get to London, and it starts stomping around. Is it London? Is it, oh God, is it, might be New York. Anyways, okay. It's
a big city.
It hits a city,
a big city.
And there are some great images of the dinosaur busting through a wall, collapsing the walls, and people getting trapped underneath it. Go no! And the monster charges through, and they're shooting, you know, the tanks, and all the cops are shooting in, and it's stomping everybody, and they finally trap it into a roller coaster,
right,
and manage to trap it and kill it in the roller coaster. But the animation is so clean,
yeah.
It is, and it it's the craft of Harryhausen, a young Harryhausen,
right?
And again, I've talked about some people should have gotten a Lifetime Achievement Award, mm-hmm. if not for Ray Harryhausen.
Tom
Savini is one. Yeah. Ray Harryhausen is another one. Because yep. if not for him, you wouldn't have Phil Tippett from Star Wars. And right. You wouldn't have the Imperial Walkers.
Right.
You wouldn't have Jurassic Park kind of stuff. The kind of things that inspired directors to do monster cuts loose. I mean, I think this was sort of contemporaneous with Godzilla.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Although to be honest, actually Willis O'Brien was first. Ray Harryhausen took it and did it for a long time.
Oh yeah.
And so absolutely. I say Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, see his masterwork.
Yes. All right. Well, that was a good rundown of lots of different ladies and fellas who have contributed so much to the craft, so much to the genre.
Go Daniel Kaluuya. Yes. Go bring a trophy home.
Right. But so thanks for joining us. We appreciate you listening. And before we go, don't watch the Oscars because you'll probably end up being really disappointed. But we hope not.